Good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. We are the one, and we're at 1080 on your AM dial for over 50 years, and now, of course, 95.1 FM. Good morning. The time here at our KYMN studios is 9:02, almost 9:03. Today is the fifth day of December. And I'll tell you what, the year is 2018, and my guest was around on December 7th, just 2 days away, when, of course, a Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and this young man went into the Navy. His name is Jerry Williams. He was my guest last Monday, 91 years old, a very interesting person, and we're going to have fun here today. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair, Jerry.
Thank you, Wayne.
I'm glad that you're here.
Well, I'm glad we can see each other.
Yeah, and you know, folks, Jerry is probably about 6 feet tall, maybe 5'10", and has all his hair, and it's gray, and no wrinkles. How do you do that? 91 years old.
Just behaving myself.
Oh, okay. I think I asked you, you didn't smoke, you didn't drink, you know, and you went to church and all that. Good life.
I try to live a good life.
And we talked all about you when you were here on Monday. For those of you that didn't hear that show, very briefly, Jerry is an inventor. He owned his own company. He lost two wives, one just about 2 weeks ago. And he is the second person I've met that had a wife that passed away, and he married his deceased wife's twin sister. And that story, I only know two people that have ever done that. And, of course, you have three children, Liz, Susan, and Paul, right?
Correct. Correct.
And you have, let me see, I got to push a button here. You had a brother, Keith, that's 2 years younger than you.
Yes.
And is he still with us?
Yes, he is.
Oh, great. How about Mary Lynn, 7 years younger than you?
Mary Lynn, she's still going, working every day as a volunteer.
Wow. Isn't that great? You have the good genes. And, of course, the name Williams is very prominent in Cannon Falls. Your father was a doctor there and delivered thousands of babies?
2,000 babies.
2,000?
He was there for 44 years.
My goodness. And probably went out and delivered babies in the wintertime where he had to use a sleigh, huh?
Used a sleigh, and many of those babies were delivered on the kitchen tables.
Yeah.
In the farmhouses.
You know, when you mentioned that about the sleigh, do you, as a young man or a little boy, do you remember riding sleighs that had hot rocks to keep your feet warm?
I don't.
Okay.
I'm not that old.
Okay. Well, I've had people on the air that that did that. Uh-huh. You know, so I've had people on the air that were 100,
sure.
105.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've been around. There was no television when you were a kid. Radio was in its infancy when you were a kid and growing rapidly. And, of course, washing machines were down in the basement if you were lucky. And, I mean, just all kinds of things. Microwave ovens, for example. Portable radios, stereo. All these things happened during your lifetime. Airplanes. Look what they did with airplanes in your lifetime.
I can remember the DC-3s flying over our house. Northwest Airlines between Rochester and the Twin Cities.
Okay. I remember the first time you took trains, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Now, you remember the bathrooms on the trains?
Yes.
Where you just push the pedal and then it would open up and fall onto the tracks.
Correct.
And as a little kid, when I took the train, it was so fascinating to open that up and listen to the train. And, you know, look down that hole and see the rapid ties going by. And the first time I saw a big airplane, I thought, I wonder what they do with their bathrooms. You know, does that fall out of the sky? Oh, boy. Before we get any further, Jerry Williams came in. Now, he's carrying something in a box, and I said, well, let me grab that for you. And he said, it's a present for you. And I said, a present, huh? And I haven't opened the box, and it is heavy, and I want to get to that because I want to see what it is. Now, I told you I was going to jot down what I think it is, all right? Something, I don't know what it may be called, but let me put down, okay, I'll just put that word down. Okay, now I'm going to open it. Are you ready, Jerry?
I'm ready.
Can you? I don't want you to see it. Okay, you ready? Okay, I got the box opened. It's about 12 by 12 square, and it has, oh, this is fun. Is this what you brought me? I can pop these things. I love to do that. Oh, I didn't even think of that. Ladies and gentlemen, live and in color from the KYMN studios, I have in my possession a box full of 78 records, and they are very they can break, so you have to be careful with them. And of course, some of us remember that turntables came with 45 and 78, and I used to play 78s when I first started my career. And this one here is Margaret Whiting, Oh, But I Do. There's, how many are in here, do you think? About 18?
No, I think it must be 40 or 50.
Oh, one. My goodness. So, no wonder it was that. Baby, Won't You Please Come Home. Columbia. Oh, you have RCA Victor, Columbia, Capitol. Wow, thank you. And Decca. Wow, every kind of. This is something here. Tory on the Bonnet. I think that's what that said. I should put my glasses on. Once again, you're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair, and here's Evelyn Knight. I know that name. And Grandfather's Clock. Now, are you going to come back again and bring a turntable? The turntables are coming back. They got lost when the cassette came along, and then, of course, with the electronics today, which are amazing, which you were involved in, are just simply amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Wayne.
I'll put these down, and while I'm doing that, have you been to the Quarterback Club lately? The Quarterback Club restaurant over on Highway 3 and 3rd Street?
I pick up hamburgers and take them home
to
my wife.
You know what? I was there last night, and I always order like their chicken. I love their chicken and their baby back barbecued ribs. And I ordered their tuna fish sandwiches or their egg salad sandwiches. I ordered their, like today they have a turkey special with gravy, mashed potatoes, and corn. But last night I thought, I think I'm going to have something different. And I ordered one of those six hamburgers they have on special. Mine was the one with the mushrooms. Mm. Oh, man, I forgot they're flame-broiled, and they are so good. What kind do you bring home to your wife?
Oh, it was just a simple hamburger.
Okay.
She could put some ketchup and mustard on and go on.
I was trying to do this to the box. I'm going to take a break here, and it will give me 30 seconds to set this box down so I can see it better, okay? Jerry Williams is my guest on KYMN Radio. He grew up in Cannon Falls, but he never got to go through the ceremony for his graduation. In what year was that?
1945.
And we'll tell you why and continue his life story from there.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25 plus employees, and they all work every hour they're open, so you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service.
Remember Leo's South in Lakeville. We sell fun.
Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
Portable One, the one you want at Leo South.
We sell fun.
Winter Walk is this Thursday in downtown Northfield. As you are enjoying the night, don't forget to stop into Champion Sports to stock up on all your winter Raider gear. It's official, winter is here, and Champion Sports in Northfield is there to help you gear up for winter and Raider sports. During Winter Walk, Champion Sports is offering 20% off all Raiders gear. So stop in and browse their large selection. Let's face it, it would be financially irresponsible of you if you didn't stop into Champion and save some money.
I'm Priya, and I'm part of the amazing community at CrossFit Scopos. I found myself getting bored with my usual gym routine. That's when I found CrossFit Scopos, a functional group fitness methodology dedicated to making you move better. You'll never be bored with a new workout every day planned by one of our fantastic coaches. CrossFit Scopos is for everybody. We don't throw tires. This community is inclusive and fun, and the workouts are making me stronger. I love this gym, and I guarantee you will too. Stop by anytime. We're located in Dundas off Highway 3 next to Menards.
At the time that those records were made, there were only 78s.
Yes.
There was no 33 and a third.
Can you hear that music?
Yes.
Do you know this song? It's peace and goodwill.
To wake up in the morning to the mockingbird's kill.
1951. That was very popular. I thought I'd play that for you, and you could. I knew you'd remember that. Once again, Jerry Williams is my guest here this morning. He lives in Northfield. He is originally from Cannon Falls. He is 91 years old. You don't mind if I repeat your age frequently, do you?
I'm proud of it.
Well, doggone right. Before we used to say we're younger, now we might cheat the other way. But here's the deal. I don't understand why you couldn't graduate from your high school class in Cannon Falls in 1945. Why did, at 17, did you go into the service? The war was still on.
Yes, that's correct. My father was the commander of the American Legion post in Cannon Falls at that time, and I think because of his position, the Navy made him aware that they were looking for young fellows that they could train to be electronic technicians. And that was because they had retrofitted all of the old vessels with radar, which had just been invented in the 1940s by the British. But the British didn't have the capability of mass producing it, but they knew America did, so they shared that technology with America. And there were several companies. Raytheon was one of them.
I've heard of that.
That took on the project of mass producing radar systems. Because that gave them the ability to see airplanes that were coming at them, and they could also see other vessels out to the horizon.
Now, for we people that don't understand that type of a deal, we kind of get it. Is it a radio beam that hits something and then bounces back and tells you where it is, how fast it's moving?
Exactly. It's a very high-frequency beam.
Okay.
And they had to invent special tubes to generate those high frequencies at that time and produce it with power.
How low on the dial or high on the dial would that be AM?
Wouldn't even be close. It was up in the megahertz range.
Wow. And so
the wavelength was probably an eighth of an inch.
Oh, wow. Now, you used to help the guy that had the radio shop in Cannon Falls? Is that you were tinkering and knew a little bit more than most people?
Well, I got to the electrician in Cannon Falls, the only one who was left after everyone was drafted. And he had a physical disability, so he was unacceptable to the Army. But he asked me one day if I could help him out in his shop, because he was busy working out on the farms as the REA was going through the area.
Oh, okay.
And he was wiring farms, and so he'd like to have somebody open his shop and be able to supply switches and outlets and plates and light bulbs and fuses, because that was at a time when drugstores didn't sell that sort of thing.
You have tube testers?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
No, the radio man across the aisle.
Okay.
Had the tube tester.
And you were right on the main street of Cannon Falls?
On Highway 19.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Just.
I know where it was. It'd be on the east southeast side of the street.
Yeah.
Say,
yeah.
By the way, I was going to ask you. Do you know that the REA is still being subsidized by the federal government?
Unreal.
I mean, all that money going to them, and they're done.
Yeah.
Well, I just happen to throw that in, and that's through all of the government, regardless when I say through all of the lifelong, for every politician, president, Senate, Congress, it's been going on forever, so it's not one party or the next, just some good lobbyists there. Just an aside there. So you didn't even get to go through the graduation, get your diploma?
I was enlisted on December 7th of 1944.
Okay.
Probably 6 months before the class graduated.
Okay. Exactly 3 years after the dropping of the bombs in Pearl Harbor. You said December 7th, 1944?
Yeah.
3 years after they dropped the bomb.
Yeah.
Because they did that in 1941.
Okay.
Yeah. In the Pearl Harbor, and then of course in 45
yes.
they had the atomic bombs.
Yes.
Yeah, so you went into the Navy. Did you go through? Did you go through boot camp?
Well, let me tell the story here a little bit. When my father learned about this, he thought about they were looking for young men. What about my son Jerry? And he says, "I don't want to see him in the Army." He was in the Army in World War One.
Oh.
And
in France.
In France.
Oh boy.
And they had to scrounge food from the natives, and they were allowed to sleep in barns. So he decided to I'm getting confused here. So he did not want to be, but he said he learned enough that the sailors usually had clean beds to sleep in and pretty good food.
And no mustard gas.
No mustard gas. No gas. No.
Yeah.
So that was why he wanted to see me in the Navy instead of in the Army.
And, of course, they were drafting high school graduates 18 years old in 1944.
Yeah.
So you did that. What about your diploma? How did that work?
The superintendent awarded my diploma to my parents when the rest of the class graduated.
Okay.
Based on the work that I had done up until I went in the Navy.
You were a very good student.
One of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we don't have to be humble. we're saving this for your great-grandchildren to listen to someday.
Oh, my goodness.
And they'll say, oh, that was great-grandfather. I didn't know that. Because that's what's fun is revealing things that in your life that you can't just walk up to somebody and say, hey, did you know I was drafted on December? So you go in the Navy, and do you go to Illinois, or where do you go?
After I had to take this test, it was called the Eddy test, to see if I had the aptitude to take care of the 9 months of training that we were scheduled to go through.
Eddy.
Eddy.
Whoa,
yeah.
Captain Eddy.
Captain Eddy.
Oh my goodness.
And he was a retired naval commander, and we realized that the Navy was going to be short of electronic technicians with this new technology coming out. So he headed up the technical work for Balaban and Katz Broadcasting and Theaters in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. KATZ, right? Katz?
Could have been.
Yeah.
Well, my memory doesn't pick that
okay.
one up.
I've seen the name.
Well, so my dad invited a Navy recruiter to come down for dinner one night at our place. And after dinner, he pulled out his briefcase and handed me about 20 pages of paper. He said, this is a little test. We want you to write the answers to best your knowledge to see if you have the aptitude to go on in the rest of the training. And apparently I passed that because I got a call in that they wanted me to report to Fort Snelling for a physical. And I thought, okay, well, we'll do that. Well, my dad drove me up there and dropped me off. And they said, okay, you've passed the physical. We want you to report back here at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. You're going to Great Lakes.
Wow.
I called my father and I said, what did you get me into, Dad? He says, well, just do what they tell you. It'll be good for you. I said, well, where am I going to stay tonight? Well, call Grandma. over in St. Paul and see if you can get in there. So I called Grandma, and she told me how to take the streetcar to get to her home and spent the night there.
Did you have to take West 7th Street? The streetcar on West 7th?
I think it was University Avenue.
Oh, okay. Where did, do you know where she lived? I'm a former St. Paulite.
Oh, I see. They lived on Sherwood Avenue.
Oh, that's such a nice neighborhood.
Out on the east side.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I went to Harding High School on the east side there.
Okay.
And Johnson's over there in Washington.
It was the first time I'd ridden a streetcar.
Weren't they fun?
It was very good fun, yeah.
Did you have fun pulling the cord?
I didn't think I dared to do that.
Well, to let them know you wanted to get off?
Oh, is that right? See, I didn't know that.
Okay.
But I just went up and talked to the driver.
Okay, the conductor, yeah.
Yeah.
So you stayed overnight at Grandma's.
Stayed overnight. My father's brother, a bit older than he, worked downtown in St. Paul. He drove me over to Minneapolis to the federal building to enlist. When I went in there, they said, "Now we're about 20 of you going to Great Lakes tonight. We're going to put you in charge of that contingent." And I said, "Why me?" "Well, we think you're probably the smartest one in the group. You can handle it."
So based on the Eddie test.
Yeah. Yeah. Based on that, and so we were in boot camp, but they were again so desperately in need of the technicians in the field. I think we only spent about 4 weeks in boot camp, and we were whisked off to the next destination, which was Wright Junior College in Chicago.
I always ask this question: was there cultural shock for you when you went into boot camp? I mean, having grown up in Cannon Falls and probably not been around a lot.
Well, there were so many people like me, fellows just like me from small towns.
And okay.
Even from some of the cities in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So, and discovered that. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. The first place they sent us was to Wright Junior College, as I said, and that was for what they call the pre-radio. It was a one-month course to see if we'd be smart enough to make it through the next year. And during that time, I got very ill and was diagnosed with scarlet fever.
Oh, yeah.
And they sent me back up to Great Lakes. And what I discovered when I got there, there were hundreds of guys that were sick with scarlet fever.
Now, there are people listening right now that they say scarlet fever. What was that?
There wasn't any drug that could combat it.
Right.
You were just really very feverish for the whole thing.
Okay.
And there were guys dying every night in the hospital with me.
Mm-hmm.
I had the good fortune many years later of flying on a plane and talked to my seatmate and found out that he was at Great Lakes at the same time I was there.
Wow.
And he was a medic. And he said, "Jerry, we gave you that scarlet fever. We had a bad batch of vaccine and didn't know it."
Oh, for gosh sakes.
And
of course, you went to a lawyer and sued right away, didn't you?
Funny. Well, after about 2 weeks, I was sent back for my classes. And I was only there for a few days, and I had a relapse, and they sent me back up there again for another couple of weeks until I was stronger. So I missed the whole group that I was enlisted with, started over with new guys. And some of them were graduate electrical engineers. So if I had trouble with some part of the lesson, they were kind enough to help me through that. We became very fast friends. And then we were in that program, as I say, till the following December.
Of 1945?
1945.
45. The war was over.
The war was over, but okay. They still had this need in the fleet.
Oh, sure.
Because we got word in the Navy when the last piece was signed by the Japanese, "Don't get excited about going home because we think we're still going to end up fighting Russia." So they were preparing for that.
Okay.
Fortunately, we didn't have to do that, but we didn't know it at the time.
After all your education, did you end up on a ship?
I was put aboard a cargo ship. It was called the AKA-21, the USS Artemis. And our mission on that vessel was to haul a full load of ammunition to Bikini Atoll to be placed aboard the vessels they were going to drop an A-bomb on. This was a test that the Navy wanted to see what happened to, if a whole fleet was together, how many other ships would go down. And that was an interesting experience. They had already vacated all the natives off of the Bikini Atoll, so we didn't see any bikini swimming suits.
No yellow polka dot bikinis, huh? A lot of people listening right now don't know about Bikini Atoll. I mean, practice atomic bombing? And then did they have a half the fleet or a tenth of the fleet surrounding the island? Or
there must have been about 34 or 40 ships in that conglomerate.
Wow. Okay.
Mostly old vessels that they didn't really care about, but they wanted to see what kind of damage would occur.
But you guys backed off. You weren't anywhere near the...
My commanding officer, who was in charge of communications, called me into his office and he said, Jerry, if you want to stay here to watch the A-bomb drop, you have to sign up for another 4 years. And I said, no, thanks. I want to get on with my education. So I wasn't there at that time. But
were you on a ship on a ship when it went off, or were you on shore when they did the dropping?
I was gone.
You were gone. You weren't on a ship
I wanted to get on. They put me aboard another passenger ship.
You're probably fortunate that you didn't go out there.
Yes, because I've learned subsequently that most of the fellows that stayed on the ship have died from leukemia.
Yep, okay.
Radiation poisoning.
Isn't that something?
So I think that might have been part of the test to see what would happen.
Yeah, and who would think that? But possibility.
Yeah.
Guinea pigs.
But I was discharged on the 5th of July, the day after my birthday, expecting to go home for my birthday, but the crew that was taking care of all the paperwork wanted the day off, so I had to stay one more day. And my intention at that time, Wayne, was to go to the University of Minnesota to study electrical engineering, because I'd had such a thorough indoctrination in electronics that I wanted to pursue that further. When I went up to register, they said, sorry, but the classes are already filled up with guys that got here before you. Come back next year. I went home and told my folks about that. And I have to preface this by saying my birth mother died when I was 6 years old. But my father remarried 3 years later, married a young lady who had just graduated from St. Olaf College. And she said, Jerry, instead of wasting a year, let's go over to Northfield and see if we can get you into St. Olaf. And we did that, they said, we'll accept you as a student, but you have to find your own housing, because we've used up everything we could think of in Northfield. My stepmother's name was Viola, and she said, let's go over to the library and see if any of the ladies working there now were the ones that I knew when I was a student here. And we went over there and met a pastor's widow, who said, I'm taking one boy now, and if they don't mind sleeping together in the double bed, they can share the bedroom. So that's what I did for my first year at St. Olaf.
And the two young men slept together in one bed.
Yes.
That would be unheard of today. Yeah, I did that when I had an apartment. I think back and I think, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know. But wouldn't... Cannon Falls is only a half hour away.
Yes.
You have gotten a car? And I mean, 1946 this would be, approximately?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, wouldn't...
It was 46.
And your dad was a doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he got eggs for some of his service or chickens. Couldn't you afford a car to commute?
I had saved a lot of money on payday in the Navy.
Okay.
In the form of victory bonds.
Okay.
And my dad, when he saw that I was going to be coming home, knew I'd need a car, so he was able to buy a 1928 Model A Ford from a farmer who had retired and was just using the car to drive into town for coffee in the morning. It only had 28,000 miles on it, so I had a car immediately when I was out of the Navy.
Well, why couldn't you?
That's kind of a slow drive, even though it was only 15 miles.
Yeah.
And we didn't have the gravel roads or the paved roads.
Okay.
At that time.
That's a while ago. Highway 19 was gravel?
Yes.
For a lot of the ways? Okay.
Well, I can tell you another little interesting side, as long as we're on that. I started writing a story about my father's life because he had such an interesting time. And I asked him one time, you always took your patients to St. John's in Red Wing or to Bethesda Hospital in St. Paul. Did you ever take them to Rochester? And he said, no, that was a gravel road from Cannon Falls to Rochester.
Wow.
But that was in 1930 when he moved there. But in 1930, I got a report that in 1934, the Federal Highway Department and the Minnesota Highway Department decided to pave the road from Cannon Falls to Rochester.
Highway 52?
52.
That was, for folks that don't know, you were born in 1927.
27.
So you went through the Depression and the Second World War. You served. By the way, you mentioned that when you're on a ship, wasn't the merchant marines, didn't they handle most of that stuff rather than the Navy, or did the Navy have their supply ships, obviously?
No, the merchant marine were handling commercial freight.
Well, during the Second World War, they were, of course, just recently recognized as part of the military during the Second World War.
Yeah.
But you get out and you go to St. Olaf College, you room with the guy, and did you have a major at that point, or were you doing liberal arts courses?
It was chemistry, physics, English, and math.
Wow, that's a load.
Well, that was all pre-engineering courses that I had to take. But St. Olaf was an interesting experience for me, because during the war, when I was still at home yet, I was repairing radios for the townspeople, and the best station that we could get was WCAL.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I wonder if I can get a job at WCAL. Went in there and talked to Milford Jensen, who was the manager, and he said, well, Jerry, what I'd like you to do is go up to St. Paul and take the exam with the FCC. It's an 8-hour written exam to get a first-class license, and then you could operate the transmitter on the weekends when we're short of help. So I did that and had my license in about 2 weeks and put in a lot of time over there.
You took that test with just the basic knowledge you learned in high school in St. Olaf and tinkering?
The knowledge that I gained in the Navy.
Okay. All right.
I was well prepared for that.
Did you get a manual to study for that FCC test for first-class phone?
I think I did have a little book.
Okay, because, folks, that's a tough test.
Yeah.
And you have yours framed, and I'm proud of you. That's really something.
Yeah. The book just kind of gave us a clue of what the test was going to include.
Yeah.
But the Navy did a wonderful job of training us. So we were in classes from 8 in the morning until 8 at night.
Wow.
With time out for meals
and then
physical therapy.
And then you studied after that. What did you go to St. Olaf for 1 year?
I decided to stay a second year.
Okay. Did you have to stay in the same place?
For two reasons.
Okay.
No, we found a home with a newly built basement, and I shared that room with three other fellows.
Okay.
Including my brother.
Do you know what street it was on?
Orchard Street.
Okay. Know where that is.
The first house was on Plum Street.
Oh, okay. I know where that is.
Yeah. But I had such a great time at St. Olaf because of WCAL, but also a young lady. There's a story there.
Okay.
After I'd been accepted at the college as a student, I decided to see if I could get into the St. Olaf band because I still had my alto sax from high school days. And talked to Dr. Berglund. It was his first year here at St. Olaf. And he said, well, we don't need any more alto saxes, Jerry. But if you'd be willing to play the school's baritone sax, we could take you in. I said, well, I think the fingering is the same between the two instruments, so I could do that. So when I reported for the first rehearsal, I saw an empty chair between the alto saxes and the clarinets. And, of course, you sit in a musical organization. Your instrument determines where you sit. So I took that chair and discovered some nice ladies sitting on both sides of me. The one lady that is still alive and lives across the street from me now in Northfield here, Shirley Tollefson was her name. But on my right side, there were two young ladies that were obviously twins. They were identical in appearance. And we became quite well acquainted because when the band isn't rehearsing, you have time to visit a little bit. And one of the ladies, I'm sorry.
The two twins are sitting there, and yeah. Are you going, wow, those are beautiful women. I've seen their pictures, and they were and are. And do you had this thought, like, boy, they're both beautiful. Which one should I ask out?
I didn't have to do that.
Why?
I was sharing with Lorraine, was sitting closest to me, and I was sharing with her that I'd made a mistake in signing up for the wrong chemistry class. They had two sections of beginning chemistry, one for those that had high school chemistry and those who had not. Well, I'd had 6 weeks of high school chemistry before the Navy took me, so I signed up for that one. And that was a mistake because you got the same credit no matter which one you took. And I was venting my frustration with Lorraine, and she said, well, she was 2 years ahead of me. She was a junior at that time. And she said, I had chemistry. Maybe I can help you with it. And so she said, after rehearsal, let's go over to Moon Hall, to the dining hall, and have supper, and then we'll go to the library, and I'll help you study. Well, that worked out very well. And after about 3 months, I started looking at her a little differently. And we became very interested in each other and dated occasionally. And that's why I came back the second year.
Oh, okay. I have a question. Lorraine and Florraine,
yes.
Were they called Lore and Flo?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Everybody called them by their given names.
So what was it on Florraine that told you it wasn't Lorraine?
Oh, Florraine had a little birth defect on her left eye, so it gave it a little squint. And that's why I could tell them
okay.
apart.
Okay, all right.
But the students could not tell them
yeah.
apart
well,
at
I
all.
Imagine. How much did they ever switch when somebody was dating them? Like they thought they were going out with Lorraine and it was really Florraine or vice versa?
Florraine confessed to me that on two occasions they did that.
That's funny. So how, did you end up at the University of Minnesota?
After the 2 years, then I registered at the university.
And what was going on with you and Lorraine?
Lorraine, when I came back the second year, Lorraine was starting to talk about marriage because she was a senior. She was off to teach. They were both home ec majors and both became home ec teachers. And I said, Lorraine, I can't get serious at this point yet. I still have 5 years of schooling ahead of me because engineering is a 5-year curriculum. And some of my credits from St. Olaf did apply, but I still had to do the full 5 years. And so she understood that and accepted that. And I can still remember how we broke up that night because we stood on the steps of Agnes Melby Hall holding both hands. And praying, Lord, if it be your will that we should be get together as husband and wife, then save us for each other. And that was the end of it. We never dated another time that year.
That year. So now you're on.
But now I'm at the university.
Okay.
And after a year or so there, I just realized that there were no girls in any of my classes. I wasn't going to get acquainted with anyone. So I decided to write a letter to Lorraine. I didn't know where she was, but I knew where her folks lived.
So where was that?
St. James, Minnesota.
Okay.
So I sent a letter to her in care of her parents. And a week or so later, I had another letter back indicating that the spark of love was still there.
Oh.
And that she was teaching in Truman, Minnesota.
Okay.
Which is only about 15 miles south of St. James. So I would drive my Model A Ford down there to pick her up and take her to St. James. We'd spend the weekend together with her folks over there. And after about...
But you didn't... You had your own... You used a couch or something.
Slept in her brother's bedroom.
Okay. Yeah. That was back then. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Lorraine's parents think you were pretty cool or enjoyed you or you enjoyed them?
They accepted me.
Well, that's what I mean, I guess. Yeah.
And I enjoyed their parents. They were They were Lutherans like I was, and we understood each other quite well.
Did they like Lefse and Lutefisk?
I don't ever recall getting that. Their Flange grandparents were all German immigrants.
Oh, okay.
So we had a lot of German food,
okay.
Which was a change for me, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, because you have such a fascinating and interesting life, you can come back as many times as you want because I love stories, and that's the reason people listen to this radio station at this time is because I do have the opportunity to talk to some very interesting people, and I believe everybody is interesting. But I was checking you out, and you've had quite a career in your lifetime. But we're going to keep you at the university, and we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and finish up the University of Minnesota. And did you go to the football games that were coached by Bernie Bierman, I think, at the time?
Yep.
Welcome home to Northfield Manor. On the campus of Northfield Retirement Community, Northfield Manor is proud to offer HUD Section 8 subsidized equal opportunity housing for adults 62 and older. Take advantage of all amenities on campus, including our state-of-the-art theater, Imelda's Marketplace, Fitness Center, Main Street Cafe, walking trails, and more. Call today, 507-650-7332. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and every kind of thing. Come on.
Remember that one?
Sure do.
You remember who sang it? I'll give you a hint. Her nephew is George Clooney.
I know who you're talking about.
Rosemary.
Rosemary, of course.
I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything.
Rosemary Clooney, she's gonna give him everything if he comes to her house. Come on to my house. That was number 6 in all of 1951. And I'm playing music back then. I can't go as far back as my guest graduated from high school because I don't have the music from there right now at my fingertips. So, anyhow, we're at the University of Minnesota. You and Lorraine were together at St. Olaf, parted ways because she was older and graduated. She's teaching, and she's in Truman, not far from her hometown of St. James. You write her a letter in care of her parents. She responds and says, yes, there's still a flame in my heart for you. And then you go down in your Model A and sleep on the couch or the brother's bedroom, and you're in at the university. When do you guys marry? Your age and what year were you still in school?
We got serious on those weekends and started thinking about marriage. And she said, but we can't marry this next year because I've already signed my second year's teaching contract.
All right.
So that was all right with me because I had all the schooling ahead of me yet. Her sister,
Florine,
met a young man on the bus on the weekend when she was returning to the school where she was teaching, and they got serious, and before long they were engaged to be married too. And their mother said, now girls, there's only going to be one wedding this next year. You can decide which one it's going to be. So they had their heads together and decided, let's do a double wedding. And that was fine with her mother. In fact, it became the social event of the year at St. James. We had people sneaking into the wedding and sitting in the balcony to watch.
Well, yeah, two twins marrying two guys. Yeah. that I saw the pictures. They're both beautiful.
It was a great experience.
So did after you got married, did Lorraine have to finish her contract?
No, we waited until June of 1950 when she had already finished it.
Okay, all right.
And I had sublet an apartment from another couple that were living near Luther Seminary.
Okay.
He was studying to be a pastor, and they were off to do some camping of some kind for the summer. So that was our first 3 months were in that apartment which was walking distance to the streetcar lane to get to the university.
What street was it, the apartment?
Como Harriet.
Okay. I know where you're at. Okay.
And then when fall came, we had to move. But at that point, the university had quite a village. They called it the University Village, with trailers and some small...
Quonset huts?
Yeah, that's the term I couldn't think of. So we rented one of those trailers. It was not very well insulated. In fact, when we had snowstorms, I'd wake up with a pile of snow on my pillow. The bathroom was about 200 yards away from us, so you didn't go out in very much in the night. But
now, why was the bathroom 200 yards away?
It was common to all of the trailers.
Yeah.
It was just our
That's a hike. That's a hike. That's a block.
Yeah, it was just our misfortune that we were in one of the few that was available, which was some distance from there. Yeah.
And, of course, for those that are younger, there was a boom in housing after the Second World War. Men were coming home, women, and getting married and needed places to live, and the building wasn't keeping up with the demand. Yeah. So you end up in a place, a Quonset hut. I lived in a Quonset hut for not very long, just when I was very little, with my uncle. Okay. And I always remember it as a half a can. Cut a can in half, you know, not lengthways, but sideways. That's what a Quonset hut looked like.
Circular roof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you lived in there. And
our heating was a little oil stove.
And dangerous.
And run and get the oil and put it in the stove. And
it'd be too hot or too cold.
If we were gone on the weekends, of course, the oil would run out. So we'd come home and it would be ice cold in the cabin, in the trailer, I should say.
Quonset hut.
We were in a trailer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And I'd fill the oil tank and get the stove going, and then we'd go to a movie. And by the time the movie was over, the place was warmed up.
Do you remember what movie theater? Did you go downtown St. Paul?
No, it was Dinkytown.
Oh, Dinkytown. Okay, I'm not. Well, there's some still operating from that era in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting life for us.
Now, what did Lorraine, your first wife,
yes.
Did she get a job while you were finishing studies at the U?
I don't think she did.
Okay. Were you starting to have your children, Liz, Susan, and Paul?
No.
Okay.
That had to wait a few years yet.
Okay.
But I just don't remember. I know Lorraine had a lot of fun with some of the other ladies that were stranded there, too, and they just visited a lot.
Sure.
I think we might have done some common meal preparation there.
Did she do some typing for you, for papers?
Yes, she did. Yeah. That she did. One funny experience was when we were going to my parents or her parents for the weekend, we'd come back home, and she had to worry about the plants that she had. So she'd farm the plants out to some of the other women where they were. And she said, I know what I'm going to do. Next time I'm going to put them in the refrigerator. Because it doesn't freeze in the refrigerator. Well, I said, don't be surprised, Lorraine. So when we got home, she said, she pulled out a dish of celery that she'd cut. And she said, see, it's not frozen. And she almost broke her fingernail poking on the absolutely clear ice.
Oh, my gosh.
In the pan. She had to continue to farm out her plants.
Now, being young and no children and going to school and her taking care of the house and all that, did you go out dancing?
Neither one of us were dancers. And the way that happened to me was that when I was in high school, we had a band director who had played in a dance band on board ships. And so he started a dance band in school. And we kids really enjoyed that. So we had saxes and clarinets and trumpets and piano, of course, and drums. So we never danced in high school.
You were playing?
Playing my sax.
Oh, boy.
But I did have an opportunity to.
I got
to
ask you a question. I've asked this question of saxophone players before, and almost 100% of them didn't know whom I'm speaking of. Does the name Earl Bostic mean anything to you?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Okay, he was a great saxophone player in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I interrupted, and it's 8 minutes before 10 o'clock. Jerry Williams is my guest here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. He is 91 years old, and we're going to get to his even owning and building his own company, which I believe is still operating and having many employees. And in addition to that, a lot of other things. He's invented things that are pretty fascinating. But let's continue after this break, and we'll keep you in the University of Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota, and get you out of there, okay? You with me on that?
I'm with you.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio.
Winter is officially blown in. And while that may not make everyone happy, it does provide the perfect backdrop for the 20th annual Winter Walk in downtown Northfield. The Chamber of Commerce would like to invite you to head to downtown Northfield this Thursday evening, December 6th, to experience downtown by candlelight. Take in one of our fantastic dining options, shop in one of our many unique shops, take a ride on a horse-drawn wagon, march in the parade, and experience the first-ever Winter Walk fireworks starting at 9 p.m. For more information and a full list of the evening's many other events and activities, go to northfieldchamber.com. We will see you at Northfield's favorite night of the holiday season this Thursday evening.
The staff at the Archer House River Inn in downtown Northfield wishes you and yours a very happy, prosperous holiday season. And thank you, patrons, for the support you've given throughout the year. If you're looking for charm, the upscaled Archer House River Inn is one of the best hotels in town. Merry Christmas from the Archer House River Inn.
Okay, now I want you to get close to the microphone. Okay, Jerry Williams, I'm going to push a button here, and it's going to be the title of the song, and you tell me who you think sang this, okay? And this is from 1951.
Quite a few of the vocalists at that time.
Yep.
Could have been Perry Como.
No. Perry Como did, I think, have one in the top. He had the number 5 song in 1951. This guy had the number 2 song in 1951. And believe it or not, he still records. And he even recorded an album with Lady Gaga. You know who Lady Gaga is?
I don't.
Okay. Well, a lot of people know who Lady Gaga is. This is Tony Bennett.
Okay.
Tony Bennett. And he was around in the top 10 in 1951. Of course, he got internationally known for his I Left My Heart in San Francisco, high up on a hill. 5 minutes before 10 o'clock, you're at the University of Minnesota, and you're taking these courses. Does this develop into a doctorate degree?
No, it did not. I was taking courses in the accounting department as well, thinking I'd get a business administration and a Bachelor of Engineering.
Okay.
But I had a great deal of trouble trying to schedule the classes in the two different schools. There was no coordination, no help at all to put it together. So that only lasted for 1 year, but I got enough accounting that it would help me later on when I was running my own business, because I could read a balance sheet and a profit and loss statement and things like that.
So how many years did you complete then? You did 2 at St. Olaf.
And
you had said that you had 5 years ahead of you.
It must have been 4 at the university.
So did you graduate with a BA or master's?
BEE, Bachelor of Electrical Engineering.
Okay. So are you a guy that would donate to the University of Minnesota? Do you follow the Gophers, or did you go to the games back then,
sure,
when they were,
I remember Bud Grant and I think Bruce Smith.
Oh, he's the Heisman Trophy winner from Faribault. Did you know that?
I probably did at the time.
Would you like to see his trophy? It's at the Rice County Museum.
Okay.
Right there on the end of Highway 3.
Sure.
So
they had some very good teams in those years.
And I came up with Sandy Stevens and last name Bell, a defenseman. Those are the people that I remember. And they were from the, like, 1960, 61. And you were, like, 10 years ahead of that.
Yeah, you know, that already.
So, okay. Tell me, after you graduated, did you have a job lined up?
That was interesting. I graduated in December of 1950. You see, in those days, you could take any class, any quarter, and there were four quarters in a year, of course. So I didn't have to wait. A school year was only three quarters,
mm-hmm.
so it didn't take a year. So I graduated in December of 1950.
Okay.
There were no jobs for electrical engineers in the Twin Cities in those days. There were none of the companies that we see today, except for Honeywell, and General Mills did a little bit in electronics, anticipating what the future might hold for them.
What about radio and television at that time? I mean, that was a growing industry. Were you interested in that area of electronics?
I was very much so, because of having repaired radios and so on during the war when I was still in high school. But there were two fellows that came and were interviewing. Well, there were a lot of companies that were sending people to interview engineers to go somewhere else in the world besides staying in Minnesota. And I had an interview with RCA from Camden, New Jersey, and they offered me a job. I think it was $265 a month.
A month.
But a few weeks later, there was an interviewer from Zenith Radio in Chicago, and they offered me $290 a month. And the fellow that was interviewing me was heading up the Keller Television Development Laboratory. And that sounded really like fun, so I accepted that job. And also, Chicago was a lot closer to Minnesota than Camden, New Jersey. And I really enjoyed my work there. He was highly respected in the television industry. You see, there were no color television sets even manufactured at that point in 1950. But Zenith had the reputation of having black and white receivers that could pick up the weakest signals of anybody. And he was behind that part of the design work in the company. And I really enjoyed working for him. But after 8 months in Chicago, Frayne and I decided if we could find a job in the Twin Cities, we'd move back to Minnesota. Chicago culture was just so different for us, for coming from small towns in Minnesota. And there was an ad in one of our professional journals for a company in St. Paul called Engineering Research Associates. They were looking for engineers. And what they were was a group of fellows that worked for the Navy, developing computers that could direct for the guns on the battleship based on the radar, which was measuring the distance and the angle for them. But when the peace was signed with Japan, the Navy was forbidden from continuing any more work on that project. But they wanted to do it. And so they approached these engineers that had been doing that work and said, if you can find an angel somewhere in the Twin Cities, we can give you a contract, continue to do that work.
And we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back, and we'll pick up from there, all right?
Okay.
My guest this morning is Jerry Williams. Jerry Williams lives in Northfield. He's from Cannon Falls originally, and he just recently lost his wife, Florine, a couple of weeks ago, and she was the twin sister of a woman he married in 1950, 1950. We'll be back. What we're going to do right now, Jerry, so we can take a break and cool off a little bit, we are going to play the number one song in all of 1951. And I remember my mother loved this guy, and the deal was a real big deal that he was deaf. And he had to wear a huge hearing aid. And we'll get into that type of stuff with you. But when back in 1951, to have a hearing aid, it was a, you know, as large as a pack of cigarettes and et cetera. And you can tell us more about that because you were in the business of that somewhat. So here it is, the number one song of all of 1951.
If your sweetheart sends a letter of goodbye, it's no secret you feel better if you cry. When waking from a bad dream, don't you sometimes think it's too real? But it's only false emotions that you feel. If your heart to hang around too long, and your blues keep getting bluer with each song, remember sunshine can be found behind a cloudy sky, so let your head down and go on and cry. If your heart aches, seem to hang around too long, behind a cloudy sky, so let your head down and go right on, baby, and cry.
There you have the number one song in all of 1951. On the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, A Friend You Can Count On. And that was Johnny Ray, and it's called Cry. And I just am looking at a wedding picture that my guest shows me, and he married a woman named Lorraine who had a twin sister named Florraine, and they got married. My guest got married to Lorraine, and his brother-in-law through Florraine. They had a dual wedding, in other words. And every one of the 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 people in this wedding picture were Olies, except for one. And they came from the classes of 48, 51, 47, 55, 50, and 52. So they all are Olies on there. Well, we're going to continue our conversation with a very interesting gentleman. His name is Jerry Williams. He's 91 years old. He's an inventor, and He is a guy that has a lot of things that he has brought to the studio last week and again this morning. Stuff, of course, I can't show you on the radio, but I was thinking about you on the way in, Jerry. I have a garage full and plus of mementos that I have that mean something to me. And I they take up room, yeah, and they don't mean anything to anybody but me. Mm-hmm. And I have gone through some of them over the last 30 years, and I look at it and I keep it. And I'm thinking, when I die, that, boy, I'll tell you what, my wife and my daughter, my granddaughter, and maybe some friends just couldn't wait to get into these boxes and look through them. In reality, they don't. And I talk to people, and it doesn't mean anything except to me. Yeah. And maybe that's why I keep it, because I want to see it. And once I'm done, everything will be gone. But, you know, like I have jackets from every fishing opener for the last 30-some years from the Minnesota Department of Tourism. And, you know, who wants that after I... And I can't wear 30 jackets. So, anyhow, I see you have stuff that you enjoy that you keep in your life. I'm going to look at this because it looks like a microphone on here. I'm looking at a picture upside down. Oh, my gosh. Oh, it looks like... a shredder, the kind you shred cheese on, you know, with the four different cuts on it. That's what is that?
That's what we called it, a magnetic drum. That was the memory system for the computers in the 1950s. And
is that you?
That's me.
Oh, for gosh sake. And what would this be?
An oscilloscope. That was our test equipment.
Okay. Wow, there's a lot of equipment in there. That fluorescent lighting is okay for that equipment, obviously. Now, what are all those cables?
Well, they all go on. Those little things that are sticking out of that cylinder are the read record heads.
Oh, my gosh.
I think there were 300 tracks, a 16th of an inch apart.
Okay.
On that magnetic drum that rotated, and it was aluminum. It was a very thick casting. And it was sprayed with a coating that 3M used for their magnetic tape.
Now, would these be the things that punched holes in cards?
No.
This is before punch cards.
This is after punch cards.
After, okay.
That was a product called the UNIVAC file computer that we developed in 1955, 6, 7, 8, I guess, for Remington Rand. They plucked four of us out of different projects that were already going on at Remington Rand at that time.
Now let me see your profile, see if it's the same as... Yep, same nose. I see why you keep this. This is quite a deal here.
Turn it over.
Remington Rand, intra-company communication. Mr. Jerry Williams, carbon copy, New York advertising. I thought you would be interested in the closed proof of the ad you posed for. At least a half a dozen people have asked me where we got the good-looking model. I think you'll agree that the drum looks good, too. Incidentally, you can tell your friends to look for you in the following publications. Systems, U.S. News and World Report, Business Week, Harvard Business Week, Newsweek, Fortune. Thanks again for the wonderful cooperation you gave us in taking this picture. Because you were an inventor and worked on this particular program?
Yes, yes.
Wow, that's quite an accomplishment.
And I brought this one in case you've never seen a patent, what a patent looks like.
I have never seen what a patent... Well, I've seen them in books. I've never seen one.
But that was the patent for the circuitry that I used, that I developed for this system.
Okay, and you got to own it?
Yes.
How? 1963, but patent number 3,105,224, and it has all the schematics on it, electronic schematics. And your attorneys were Bushman, Darley, and Cushman again. How can you own that when you work for a corporation?
Well, you see, you own it, but you sign it.
Can I get you closer to the mic, please?
You have to sign away the patent to that, the company you're working for.
That's what I thought.
And in return, you get one. It says $1 and other considerations. And I asked the attorney, what are the other considerations? You get to keep your job.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you brought this up because I've often wondered about that. Imagine the money that the guy that invented the stick post-it notes,
yeah,
3M, you know, he developed that in their laboratory on their time and came up with it. And, of course, it's a multi-million dollar business, yeah, now. And so you go and you invent all this electronic stuff, but because you signed a contract with the company, they own the rights, you get the framed patent.
Yeah. Well, that's that's what we pay you for, is to develop these things.
Well, were you thinking to yourself at any point that, you know what, I think maybe I ought to get into business for myself? When I come up with things like this, I can have the benefit.
That came a little later, but in an entirely different field. But one of the things that was unique about that particular circuit, it was the first use of transistors in a computer. Up until then, they were using vacuum tubes
and
electromechanical relays.
So it went from a 100 by 100 foot computer to a 15 by 15, oh, smaller than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing because those tubes took up a whole lot of room.
And generated an immense amount of heat.
Yeah.
That we had to have the air conditioning.
Yep.
To cool the equipment, not to cool the people.
Yeah. When Fairway Foods, which is now something different, but when they opened their new plant here in Northfield quite a while back in the early 70s, they put in a computer system. And as a member of the Chamber of Commerce, I was an ambassador, and we went up there, and I also got to know the people. And we had to wear masks and a hair thing and things on our feet. And yeah, when we walked in a door, that's a blow it away. And then you walk through plastic, thick plastic, see-through things that were hung from doors. And then went into the computer room where it was air-conditioned. And, you know, it took up a lot of room. Today it'd take up less than what we have here.
Yeah.
But so you were at that beginning of that.
Yes, yes, I was. And you see, dust was the enemy of electrical switches and contacts. And so that's why you had to have all that filtering going on. The other problem we had was we did a computer and delivered it to Douglas Aircraft out in Long Beach, California. And we had a lot of silver-plated contacts in the computer. And we discovered then that silver sulfide forms when there's free sulfur in the air. We could go out in the parking lot and see the oil pumpers up on Signal Hill, and there was just so much free sulfur that it tarnished those contacts that we had, so that within about a week the computer was unusable. We'd have to open the cabinets up and pull out the printed circuit boards, and with a pink pearl eraser, you could rub away the silver sulfide. And then it would be good for a few more days. So first thing I did when I got back to St. Paul was to write an engineering change order, convert everything from silver plating to gold plating, because gold was not susceptible to the silver sulfide.
Do you remember the price of gold then and silver?
I don't.
Okay. But there was a significant difference.
Oh, yes. And that's why they were using silver. In a normal environment, silver was just fine, but not in that environment out there.
Do you remember what the corporate people said that you delivered the computers to? I mean, were they thinking that it was a hoax or something? The people whose...
We delivered it for payroll at Douglas Aircraft.
Douglas Aircraft.
And there was an army, probably 50 girls, doing key punching of punch cards.
Okay.
That could be copied or read and sent to this computer to store those records. And then from that, they could generate the paycheck at the end of the week or month.
With the thing breaking down because of that silver deal, did they think that maybe the computers were just a dream, or did they realize that you could correct the problem with gold?
When we showed them what the problem was and we knew how to fix it, they accepted it.
Okay.
So it just became a matter of routine at the end of every day, almost, to clean the cards.
Do you wish that you would have been a salesman instead of regards to money?
No. We were having too much fun with the engineering kid.
Now, were you over on like Shepherd Road or Mississippi Boulevard?
Yes.
Sperry Rand, I remember.
Yeah, were on West 7th Street, I think.
Yeah.
When we were delivering, developing that machine.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty amazing.
But
did you have any insight at all back in the early 50s on what a computer was going to do eventually?
No concept. It boggles my mind what I have in that little iPhone. In fact, I have trouble operating it. I have to call my grandkids for help.
Yeah, well, that's, I know what you mean. But that iPhone carries more computer power than the people that landed on the moon.
That's right.
And I can remember thinking, they're relying on these computers to do things. How can they trust that? And then I use the iPhone every day and say, oh, wow. And I'm sure they had fail-safe, et cetera. But it's amazing. You were right there at the birth of computers.
At the birth of, that's true.
That's pretty amazing. How long did you work for Sperry Rand? Or Rand, whichever it was, over on West 7th?
I was 28 years in the computer industry.
Okay.
After Sperry, I went to Control Data.
Okay.
And had a wonderful experience there, too, because we were pioneering. And I was sent to Washington, D.C. to represent us, represent Control Data on some of the engineering standards developments activity. In fact, at one point I was chairing the American National Standards Committee for computers. And that was a lot of fun because it also progressed to doing it internationally.
So did the people in Washington feel they were smarter than you? Or did they accept what you were presenting to the Army, Navy, Air Force, government, office buildings, etc.?
I don't remember any conflict with the government.
Okay.
They were usually looking for more standards development because what they wanted was interconnectability between different brands of computers. And that was one of the first products that we came out with, ASCII, American Standard Code for Information Interchange. And that was a real breakthrough because, of course, IBM was our principal competition at that time. But it was kind of fun to be on the committee and sit there with the guy from IBM was on my left, the guy from Sperry was on my right, and then there were guys there from Honeywell and I've forgotten them.
Medtronics?
There were about 12. No, not Medtronics.
Okay.
That was strictly medical.
So okay.
No. They were using our products.
Okay.
not a competitor. But
were there like generals in the room when you talked to the services, admirals?
No, and I don't recall that. We didn't have to. They were there as a member of our committees.
Okay. So how long did you stay dependent and before you went independent into your own company? You must have been making a pretty good wage.
Yeah, I think my salary at the most was about $48,000 a year.
Wow. In the 50s?
Well, in more that would have been more of the 70s.
Oh, okay. Well, still.
Later on.
That's pretty good pay.
Yeah, it was
very good pay. Nice. And what interests me about that is that a person in your position and knowledge, when you're working for a corporation that was relatively new and building, if you outknow them, KNOW, that you could pretty much demand a salary that you feel would be compensatory.
Well, there were so many of us that there was competition for the jobs.
Okay.
But I want to tell you this little story.
I like little stories.
While I was at Control Data, because of my position in the company and nationally involved, I was invited to a planning session for the next product line. And one of the fellows who was in charge of the meeting stood up and he said, "Well, you know, we build the biggest, fastest computers in the world, and that's what we're going to keep on doing." And I stood up and I said, "You don't know where this world's going." I said, "When memory becomes cheap enough and small enough, there's going to be computers on every desk, and there won't be enough work for these big dinosaurs that we build." And another fellow stood up and he said, "Jerry, I've known you for many years, but that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard you say."
Huh.
At that point, my attitude toward Control Data changed. And 4 years later, the company was out of business.
Wow. Where were you? What happened after that meeting? Did you quit or did they fire you? Or?
I started wondering about what I could do.
Yeah.
And this story takes us back to this phase of my life. I've always been interested in church sound systems. And that grew out of when I was a teenager in Cannon Falls. The organist was having trouble with her organ intermittently. The keys didn't always work. So she said, "Jerry, do you think you could look at this?" Well, I discovered there'd been mice running around in there in the keyboard and peeing on the contacts. And so I just cleaned up all the contacts, and the organ was working fine. And that kind of stimulated my interest in church needs. In fact, when I was at the university as a student, I made a little money on the weekends by installing sound systems in churches. For example, the Vesa Lutheran Church, the Cannon Falls, one of the Lutheran churches there.
And this was all new. It was all technology.
New, relatively new.
Yeah. Yeah. And what years would this have been?
In the
1950s. Yeah. Well, it was pretty very new.
Yeah.
To have audio.
Yeah. Sound systems in the church. Because all of the churches I worked in had nothing.
Right.
And there were people that were having hearing problems, and so they needed the sound systems for that. And in some cases, I would accommodate that by putting headphones in one of the pews that were connected to the amplifier so they could sit there. And that leads me to the next chapter.
Well, wait a minute. Headphones, did you have a long cord to the...
We had a long... We would wire that... We'd wire the pew that was the easiest to get a wire from the power amplifier that was feeding the loudspeakers.
Okay, so...
To that pew, and then we put in some jacks in the pew to plug the headphones into.
Okay, I was wondering. Okay.
I think we may have even had volume controls on them for them.
Okay.
To do that. Well, skip a generation here, and we had moved to Edina, Minnesota, to Normandale Lutheran Church, and it was a fledgling congregation, and I put the first sound system in that church. And then as the congregation grew up to where it is, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 members now, I had to keep adding to it. But one day the pastor came to me and he said, "Jerry, there's a family in our congregation whose mother is unable to hear the services. And they would be willing to offset any cost that would be involved to help her out." I said, "Okay." I immediately started thinking about buying some better microphones, maybe a little better quality amplifier. And I thought maybe I should meet these people. I found out that their mother was 83 years old. She sat under the balcony. We had no loudspeakers. Worst place she could sit acoustically, and she couldn't hear. She had hearing aids, but she couldn't hear. So I said, "Well, I've been thinking about this as I sit in church here. When the day's coming," and that was just when the first little pocket radios, the AM pocket radio transistors, they called them.
Well, I was going to bring one to show you the one I have. Okay.
And I thought, now there's an idea. If I build a little transmitter which I knew how to design and build with vacuum tubes, and broadcast a service inside the church. We could get some of these little pocket radios and tune them to that frequency.
Mm-hmm,
and
they, mm-hmm. AM or FM?
AM.
Okay.
So I mentioned that to the family, and they said, well, that sounds like a good idea. So I bought some little Sony transistor radios, took out the loudspeaker to reduce the weight, fixed the tuning to the channel that I had decided to put it on.
Which channel was that? Was it high or low? Or?
It was low. I think it was 455, which in fact is the intermediate frequency that pocket radios use. They convert the broadcast signal to 455 and amplify that.
Yeah, but you can't get any lower than 510.
On the dial. Yeah, but we're way back ahead
of
the dial.
Now, did you have to have FCC approval?
That was my question of the ladies. I said, I don't know, I have to get the FCC approval. Well, I called them about it, and they said, yeah, there's a provision in the code for low-power transmitters.
So LPT. That's what this FM is on.
Okay.
Yeah. That is greater power, of course.
I had to build a transmitter with vacuum tubes, even though I knew how to use transistors in a computer, but I didn't know how to build a radio transmitter with transistors. So I just found an old chassis in my junk that I could put tubes into and power, and ran a wire about 15 feet long up across the balcony for the antenna. And I tried it for a few weeks till I was satisfied that it was all right, and gave it to this lady. And after the service, I went up to see her, and I said, how did that work for you today, Ellen? She started to cry. And I said, what's the problem? She said, I'm so happy. That's the first time I've heard the sermon in the 3 years I've been coming to this church. And then her daughter said, now we're aware of a couple of other people. Why don't you fix up receivers for them, too, and we'll pay you for them. And so that's what I did.
And this is a direct plug-in as opposed to over-the-air?
It was over-the-air.
Okay.
Over-the-air.
And the frequency was 460, did you say?
I think 455.
455. And, I'm thinking about the transmission of that. Did you have to have a relatively small antenna?
I used a long wire antenna.
Okay, all right. Just like in the old days, you did that for your TV,
or like stringing an antenna to the barn.
Yeah. So did that bring on an idea in regards to business?
When I saw control data going down the tube,
and I thought, literally,
I thought, I wonder if I could make a business out of this. Well, at that time, I was also maintaining a van full of recording equipment for the band director from Waseca. Herb Streitz was his name. He would drive up to the cities, and I'd lie on my back under his all the equipment in his truck and work on it, fix it.
Make sure. What was he using that for?
He was recording school choirs and bands and orchestras and making discs.
And then selling them. Oh, okay.
And so he came up that one weekend, and I said, Herb, I don't know how much longer I'll be able to do this for you because I'm going to start a business now of my own. And I told him what I had done at Normandale Church, and he said, well, Jerry, I'm making a mailing to 2,000 churches in Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin this fall. Give me some literature on your product, and I'll close it with my mailing.
Wow.
I said, Herb, I haven't got a product. I've just got this prototype thing that I did, and I couldn't sell a vacuum tube transmitter in these days. It has to be made with transistors. Well, he says, well, think about it.
And while he's thinking, we'll take a break.
Okay.
All right. Jerry Williams is my guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Northfield. And, Jerry, before I take this break, I just happened to think of it, last night I drove through town here. I have to say hats off to the city of Northfield. The Bridge Square is just beautiful. The trees are all lit up. And the pedestrian bridge on the Cannon River between 2nd and 3rd is all decorated with lights, and it's just beautiful. The former Maltomeal Post Cereal have the outside outline of their mill. I miss the Christmas tree. You probably remember they used to have a big Christmas tree up there, and I miss that. And downtown is a lot of lights. And tomorrow, of course, they're going to have the big annual winter walk, which will include a parade and will include livestock and will include trees and will include sales and cider. And it's going to be fun. It's a carnival. Well, not a carnival. I shouldn't say that. But it's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow night. And if you get a chance, stop down the Northfield Historical Society. We'll have something going on. Santa Claus will be at the First National Bank. It's going to be really cool. Tomorrow night, the annual Winter Walk, which is becoming a bigger and bigger deal. As a matter of fact, last 2 years ago, they filmed a movie that you can see on television now because it's Christmas season. And I can't remember, they changed the name on me, so I can't remember the name of it. But it's a movie, and it doesn't refer to Northfield. It refers to the small town, and they did it, shot everything right here in Northfield.
I remember all that.
Yeah, the Hideaway Cafe was the, called the Buster Bun or something. 1032, Wayne Eddy Affair, KYMN.
I love Grandpa's new home. There's so much to do.
That's right. Millstream Commons helps improve the lives of seniors through all kinds of fun activities. Personalized care from a dedicated and well-trained staff, amazing creative meals prepared fresh every day and served in a social setting, live-to-be-healthy fitness classes, private apartments with all the amenities of home, and a place to continue your relationships with family and loved ones. Millstream Commons, your vibrant life continues here.
We're too young.
Nat King Cole, number 8 song in all of 1951.
Baby in love.
Remember him?
Yes, I sure do.
Okay. That was a year after you got out of the University of Minnesota, I think.
We've only heard.
Well, here we are on the air, live and in color from our studios in downtown Northfield. We call it the Wayne Eddy Affair. And we are talking to Jerry Williams. He is an inventor and all kinds of wonderful, interesting things that he has done in his lifetime. And right now we're talking about the advent of computers, which he was very involved in. But now he moved to something that wasn't corporate. And were you able to work with the guy from Waseca then? Did he include your flyer in his mail?
He did. And I started... Oh, no, I'm sorry. What I gave him was a letter that I typed, and I wrote, Dear Pastor, and I described what we had done at Normandale Church, and I said, I'm thinking about making this a product. I'm wondering if there's a market, so if you have an interest in your church, just drop me a note. And sent that to Herb, and he said, that looked good. I made a copy of that and printed and put it in with all of my mailings. And I started getting a few letters back, and at that time I was doing a lot of travel for Control Data. And Lorraine, I get confused between the two girls.
Lorraine, yeah. Twins, both wives. Okay, I can understand.
Lorraine would meet me at the airport, and she'd hand me two or three letters, and she said, here, read these while I drive home. And they were very interesting. And when I got home one time, I counted that up, and we had 16 letters from pastors saying that they could use something like this in their churches. And I called Herb up to see how many. I have to back up. When Herb told me he was doing 2,000 of these things, Lorraine asked me how many letters do you have to get to make sure that we want to do this. And I said, well, I talked to my friend of mine who was in advertising, and he told me if they got 1% response on a mailing like that, they figured it was all right.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, 1% of 2,000 would be 20 letters. And so I called Herb to see how many he'd actually mailed out. He said, well, I'll check the postage, and then I can calculate it. It looks like I sent out 1,600.
Wow.
At that point, I turned to Lorraine. I said, well, there's the 1%.
There you are.
16. She said, no, Jerry, your deal with the Lord was 20 letters. You stay, you wait. And I, for once in my life, I did the right thing. I bit my tongue and didn't say anything. The next week, I think I was on a Saturday, and I was lying in bed because I didn't feel very well. And she walked in with the mail, 4 letters.
Oh, my goodness.
Wayne, I cried. I couldn't believe it. You ask the Lord for something, and he does it exactly what you want, and it's unbelievable. So I said to Lorraine, we made a commitment on this to these pastors. We said if there's sufficient response, we would make this product. So now I have on the hook. I have to develop this product. She said, that's great. So I spent the next 6 months on learning as much as I could about transistors to build a radio transmitter with them. And I got a lot of good help from the manufacturers, samples that I needed, and so forth. But then I also had the FCC rules that told me what I had to do, and that there was a provision for a low-power transmitter. And I followed all the rules, and I sent in my application to the FCC for the license. And And Lorraine called me at work, and she said, Jerry, you got a response from the FCC, but they've rejected your application. I looked at it. Well, it turned out there was a little change in the rules that I hadn't been aware of. So after that, I subscribed to the updates to the rules all the time. And I made the changes that they wanted me to do.
Were they minimal or a big deal?
They were mostly documentary.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Was it's just the way you worded things.
Yeah.
But the schematic was right. The written part was not acceptable.
But after I made the revisions in the system that they wanted, I prepared another response to them. And I said, I'm not going to mail this one in. I'm going to take a day off and fly to Washington, D.C., and talk to the engineers about it. In case there's a problem, maybe we figure it out. And when the FCC engineer came down to meet me, he said, I'm sure hoping that you can make this thing go because my wife is deaf and uses a hearing aid. She can't hear in church. I just chuckled, oh, the Lord takes care of me. In fact, my flight down to Washington was delayed, and I didn't get there until about 3 in the morning. So
oh,
I hadn't
yeah.
had much sleep, and I'm having to rent a car and drive in a place that I don't know anything
yeah,
about.
Washington's
and
terrible.
I said, Lord, it's up to you to make this thing come off today. So when he looked over the material I had, he said, go on home. We'll send you the license.
Great. What frequencies? 465? What?
I can't remember that one, Wayne, because I've made some changes along the way.
Yeah. My question is this. When you're messing around with this idea and you go to a corporate that is a manufacturer, aren't you afraid that they're going to steal your idea?
There were several companies that ultimately tried to copy us.
But now, you're saying us. You and the guy from Waseca?
My business.
Okay.
But they've all been back. They've all gone bankrupt.
Well, but when they were trying to do that, did you have to go to lawyers?
I never bothered.
Did you send them a cease and desist?
We provided such good service.
Yeah.
That I have to back up and say, initially we were selling them direct to the churches.
Okay.
But after a few years, I started getting calls from sound contractors who were installing sound systems in churches and asked if they could buy it. And I said, well, I don't have enough money in it to give you a profit. But I thought about it, and I restructured my pricing on it and took them on. And they were wonderful. they gave me an education in that industry.
Is this the finished product, or is this an upgrade of...
No, that's the current product that we're selling today.
These are still manufactured?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and who does the manufacturing?
The company's in Eden Prairie.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not outsourced?
I think they have some sub-assemblies done in the Orient.
Okay.
To cut the cost, because almost all the components are no longer made in America. The resistors, capacitors, and so on.
Yeah, I know. I used to be a hardcore Zenith guy, and that happened. Okay, so this, just looks like a little transistor radio. Is this self-chargeable?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
It's rechargeable right. Batteries.
Okay. And handheld, put it in your pocket, whatever you want, lengthy earplug going on here. So you put this together, and how big were your first ones? This size?
My first receivers were other brands. They were Panasonic receivers that I bought and modified.
Okay. Each one?
Each one. We removed the loudspeaker, and we fixed the tuning to my frequency.
Okay.
And
each one. That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
If you did well, I mean, 20, it'd take you a while, but I would imagine this goes into a lot more than 20.
Well, I had employees coming to my house working on it.
How much was the first one that you sold to the one church in Edina? Do you recall what you charged them?
We sold the whole system, I think, for about maybe $150 to $200. I can't remember.
Oh, nothing.
That's way back.
Yeah.
And now the receivers are about $75.
This unit I'm holding in my hand.
Yeah.
And what about, do you have to have your own transmitter?
The transmitter's installed in the church, attached to the sound system.
Okay.
So it broadcasts the same material.
So what do you charge for a transmitter?
I don't know. See, they sell it as a system, a package.
Okay.
The transmitter and
did you do that?
Six receivers. Now,
I know you sold your company to the employees, but did you do that, sell the transmitter and the receiver?
Yes.
Okay. And what would a package like that cost a church at that time?
It might have been $450.
So there's some profit in there.
Yeah.
He's looking at me like, why would you say that?
If there isn't a profit in there, you're not going to be in business next
week.
Of
course, and that's what I'm saying, that if you start up your own company, you got to have a profit to keep it going, you know. And
right.
I always look at companies as providers of income for many.
Sure.
You know, that's what it's all about. And, you know, when I used to own the radio station, I would hire as many people as my income could provide, because it made it so much, you know, better results. And now with I have to tell everybody, today Jeff Johnson owns the station. Computers do a lot of the work, compared to the way it was back when I had the station, and used turntables and reel to reel and cassettes and carts. But that's pretty good. What was the name of your company? I like this logo.
William Sound.
Okay, I see the W. Is there a hidden trick in that?
No.
Okay.
That's the name.
I
believe in putting my own name on it.
Yeah.
And
William Sound.
As we progressed and got larger, I had to approve every product that went out. We had a product I called the CF test. You throw the receiver up against the ceiling, let it fall to the floor, pick it up, and it's got to work.
So what does the C and the F stands for?
Ceiling and floor.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Cannon Falls.
No.
Okay. We'll be right back with our guest on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Bandle, social worker at Three Links. Being a caregiver to someone who has a form of dementia can be exhausting. Finding social support is one of the best ways you can cope. At Three Links, we host caregiver support meetings. Facilitated by Three Links social workers, the meetings are tailored to your questions. Join us the second Wednesday of each month from 4 to 5 p.m. at Three Links Care Center. Call 664-8865 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
A home is probably the biggest purchase you'll ever make, and you want to make sure everything goes smoothly. Call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell. I not only offer homeowners insurance to protect your investment, but I can help with home loans too. No wonder more homeowners trust State Farm than any other insurance company. For information, call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell at 645-4545. Providing insurance and financial services, loans are offered through State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
Somewhere there's music.
A fellow inventor, Les Paul. Les Paul, you know, the great Les Paul. You know, like you're of guitars. It's Les Paul and Mary Ford with How High the Moon. It was the number three song in all of 1951. You remember that, don't you?
Oh, I sure do.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, my friend. We have gotten you to the point of you're starting your own company, but we got a lot of years after that. So why don't we invite you to come back, and we'll pick up where you started your corporation. And now, of course, you're retired. And we'll explain then about how you sold your business to your employees, which I think is a very noble thing to do, quite frankly. So we have 10 minutes or 12 minutes to go. We have a special show coming on at noon today. Do you believe in global warming?
I do.
Okay, well, on your way home, be sure to turn the radio on, 1080 or 95.1, and listen to the show, because we have two people, Alan Anderson and Bruce Moreland, that are very studied on climate warming or climate, whatever you call it. And I have not been a total believer in it. And they're trying to have me become a believer. And every time I listen to their show, I think more along their lines than I did originally. But I kind of think, well, hey, this is the Earth and this is the universe, and things change over the, you know. So anyhow, we can talk about another thing, and that is I noticed that you have a copy of the magazine called Today out of Rochester, and you are in there writing a hand called Praying Hands by Jerry Williams, and it's about hostas. Those are a flower, I assume, or
yes,
or blooming plant. And you asked me if I knew anything about them. I know three things about them. Number one, we have them in our yard, and they're just beautiful, and they are so strong, and they are so sturdy. No matter what, you look in the spring, and you say, after you get the leaves off of them and all that, and you say, nah. And you can actually watch them grow almost. So I love them. Number two, I wish that I could put them all in the front part of our house and forget that strip of lawn that doesn't grow because of the trees. And number three, I know the most prominent hostas guy, certainly in Rice County, definitely in the state of Minnesota, from Faribault, Minnesota, Roger
Koopman.
Yes. Do you know him?
Yes.
Do you agree with me?
Yes.
Do you work with him ever or buy from him? Or tell me about it, your relationship.
In years gone by, when Lorraine and I sold the company and retired, we built our retirement home on Lake Hubert near Nisswa. And we had 3 acres of land, totally undeveloped. Our house took up some of the space, but then what do you do with all that land? And I had a lot of time on my hands because I had totally divorced myself from the electronics business at that point, just to have a new lifestyle. And we had to landscape the house because it was pretty rough at that point.
And I ended How close to the water were you?
We were about 40 feet from the water.
Oh, right on the lake. Okay.
Right on the lake. And we had to do something. After regrading everything, we were down to bare soil. And so we had to do some planting in order to keep the soil from washing away. And a friend of mine came by one day, and he looked at that, and he said, "Jerry, you know what would go good here is hostas." I said, "What's a hosta?" Mm-hmm. He said, "Well, go over to Grandview Lodge. You can see quite a few of them over there." So we drove over after supper, and we're impressed with what we saw. And then I discovered an advertisement in one of the publications we were getting for a company down toward the cities. I've lost the name of the town now, that was specialized in hostas. So we, on our various trips down to the city and back for various things we needed to finish the house, we stopped in there and bought, I think, 3 different varieties of plants.
In Faribault?
No, it was...
It was up on Cedar Avenue, on the south side of the cities?
No, it was halfway between here and Brainerd.
Oh, okay, so I wouldn't know anything about it.
Yeah. And they were quite expensive. I think we were paying about $5 or $6 a plant.
Wow.
Which I thought was a lot of money. And we were disappointed because in the spring they didn't come back. And I thought, well, there's a lot of wasted money. I didn't realize was that slope was north-facing, so it would be very slow to warm up, especially under the shade of the trees. But once the soil got warm, the plants popped up and looked better than we'd seen them in the fall.
Yeah.
So we became very fascinated about them. And we joined the Minnesota Hosta Society, and which is a group of people that have the same disease, hostaitis, and learned a lot from them. And we started going. We even went to the internet to the national conventions in Washington. Washington State, and Indiana. Can't remember now all of them, but we were fascinated because we were taking publications that were dealt with the plant, and remember reading the articles and seeing the authors' names, and here these authors were live people at these conventions. It was fun to visit with them and thank them for the nice plants that they had developed.
So we want to make a connection in the next 5 minutes with Roger Koopman.
Roger was a member of the Minnesota Hosta Society.
I imagine he might have even been president at one time.
He could have been.
But
Roger and his wife, Kat, I think was her name. Or
yes.
Came to the national meetings.
Okay.
So it was fun to see a fellow Minnesotan. And we usually meet on the airplane going to those places.
Okay.
So got well acquainted with Roger and his wife.
He is so talented.
Oh, yeah.
I had him on my show about 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
This man, he had his band, the Koopman Band. He can do anything. Have you ever been to his house?
No, I have not.
Oh, my gosh.
I've looked at his lawn. But.
You got to go in the backyard. By invitation, I stop in unannounced occasionally, and he's very friendly. His backyard is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, if you don't know hostas, I thought a hostas was a hostas. And there are so many varieties. And he made a lot of them, or crossbred, or whatever you do. And he has little stakes in there that tell you what kind it is, and the Latin name and English name.
Exactly.
And his yard is perfect. I mean... It's when, so beautiful.
When I left Lake Hubert after Lorraine died, I had 300 varieties.
300. And how do you know one from another?
With the labels that we put on.
What is your favorite one?
Oh, I have to say it's the one that I registered called Praying Hands.
Oh, that's what... Okay. I thought this was some... I didn't read the article. I see the Praying Hands is the title of the article.
No,
but you actually bred a hostas that was different from everybody else?
I didn't breed it. I discovered it.
Well, how do you discover it?
When we had about 25 or 30 hostas around the yard, we drove up one day to Pequot Lakes.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful plant developer up there. Jim Sherwood was his name, and a member of the same church that we belonged to, so we were quite well acquainted with each other. And I went up there to see what I could find that we didn't already have. And I found this one little plant in his display area. It didn't have a label on it. I just brought it in and put it on the counter in front of the sales lady. And I said, "Max, what is this?" She said, "Well, I think it's a hosta, isn't it? What did the tag say?" I said, "There was no tag on it." But I said, "I'm fascinated by the shape of the leaves on the plant." I said, "Will you sell it?" "Oh, sure. How much do you want for it?" I think she maybe said $2.95 or something like that, which is a bargain for a hosta. I took it home and dug out all the magazines that I had about hostas, and I couldn't find anything that looked like it. But it intrigued me, and I liked it so much, in fact, that I grew it on and developed, so I had divisions, and I gave one a division to each of my two daughters to grow for me. In case something happened to mine, I would still have backup plants on there. They were both living in Rochester at that time.
And we have a minute to go here.
Okay.
So this was a...
We the Minnesota Hosta Society had a meeting out in Alexandria for lunch deal, and went out there. But I dug up two divisions and potted them up and brought them along with me. So when I sat down at the table to eat, I put one in front of my brain went.
Well, 91 years old, you get to forget it a little while.
Two people who were really masters in the hosta industry. And the one lady said, "Jerry, I've never seen anything like it. Will you sell it?" I said, "No, I won't sell it. I'll give it to you, but I would like some of your hostas in exchange." "Okay." And so the other one went in front of this fellow that had the nursery there, and he said, "Jerry, I've never seen anything like it. You should name it and register it." And I said, "Okay, I don't know how to do that." He said, "I'll tell you how to do it." And that was the end of the
Okay, now, is that thing a popular plant now all over or in your yard? Or
it was named Hosta of the Year.
Okay. So
the National Association a few years ago.
Are you going to give me one for my wife to plant with our other hostas?
It's a deal.
It's a deal?
And it was also named Perennial Plant of the Year by the Perennial Plant Association.
Well, that's pretty high recognition.
I didn't know that it happened.
Would that be available at greenhouses in the area?
I know you can get it from...
Donahue's in Faribault?
No. I'm thinking my brain going is
up
dead.
On the Cedar
one,
Avenue?
The one in Northfield here on Highway 19.
Oh, Connects.
Connects.
Yeah, of course.
In fact, it was Leif Connect that told me, "Did you know that was the National Plant of the Year?"
Wow.
I said, "No, I didn't know that."
Don't you love the connections we have? Hey, thank you for coming in. Let's do it. Okay.
Okay.
Have you come back, and we'll go from when you started your business.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wayne.
Jerry Williams, my guest on KYMN Radio, born and raised in Cannon Falls, went to St. Olaf College, lives in Northfield now, married a woman. She had a twin sister, and they got married together, him and Lorraine, and then Florraine and her husband. Their spouses died, and they married each other. So he married the twins. Anyhow. An inventor, a pretty interesting fellow, Jerry Williams. KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial. It's 11 o'clock.
The staff at Reese Winter & Associates would like to take a special time out and wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. Reese Winter & Associates would also like to thank you for your patronage. We look forward to serving you during the upcoming year. Happy holidays from Reese Winter & Associates.
The KYMN Climate Show is a monthly feature here on 95.1 The One and AM 1080, discussing changes in climate and the science behind it. And now, your hosts, Alan Anderson and Bruce Moreland.
Welcome to the KYMN Climate Show with Bruce Moreland and Al Anderson, where we discuss climate issues in the news and then dig into the science and the economics behind those stories. So, Bruce, what have you got for us this week?
Oh, we have some really interesting stuff this week, but I'm going to start off with a little personal story. I happen to have a friend who lives in Paradise, California, and you may have heard of Paradise and the